Iowa has a higher population of people over the age of 85 than any other state, and over 20% of our population is over the age of 60. This hour, we'll focus on aging well. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll talk about the challenges facing our state as our population ages, and we'll attempt to unlock the secrets of longevity. I'll talk with gerontologist Peter Martin, Donna Harvey, director of the Iowa Department on Aging, and a number of older Iowans about living well in our golden years. I'll talk with 99-year-old Audrey Crabtree of Waterloo, 87-year-old Bob Welsh of Iowa City, and 94-year-old Evelyn Berkby of Sydney. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Next Monday, a group of over 20 Iowa centenarians, Iowans who are 100 or older, will be honored by Governor Branstad at a ceremony in Ames. Iowa has more people 85 and older per capita than any other state. And this hour, we're going to talk about longevity, the personal challenges of aging and maintaining a high quality of life, and the challenges our state faces as our population ages. My first guest today is only 1 year away from the century mark. I spoke with her last week. Her name is Audrey Crabtree, and she's 99 years old. In 1932, she left high school with only one credit left to go for graduation. Now, more than 80 years later, her granddaughter arranged for her to receive her diploma from Waterloo East High School. Hello, Audrey. Back in 1932, can you tell us what happened that made you leave school?
Well, I was engaged to be married, and I never was a good student, and I didn't have enough credits to graduate. But my mother had to go out of town and on family emergency, and my grandmother was living with us at the time, and Grandma got sick, and I stayed home with her because we couldn't leave her alone, or anyway, we shouldn't have. And then she got better. She seemed to be better, and we had called the doctor, and no, it wasn't any big problem. Congestive heart failure, I believe. I can't remember what they diagnosed. But anyway, I had a friend come in, a friend of my mother's came and said, "Let me stay with Grandma this afternoon. You're missing so much school." So my dad took me to school. We lived in Raymond, out in the country, and near Raymond, and we went to Waterloo to school. When I got home that night, my brother came, and I was stooping over and taking my galoshes off. And I said, "How's Grandma?" And he didn't answer me. I looked up at him, and he just said, "She's dead."
Oh.
Just like that. I was really sorry that I had gone to school that afternoon to get my assignments to work on. And so after that, even the principal, Fred Miller, when I talked to him, he said, "I would say what your mother has been through, what she had been through, and then losing her mother." And he said, "I believe you need to be with your mother."
So you stayed home. You got married the next year, right?
Yes.
So as time went on, of course, you got married. You had kids, two kids?
Yes, I was married almost 6 years before I had any family.
So when you did have kids and they got old enough to go to school, you and your husband bought a flower shop together. That was in 1957. But just a couple of months after that, your husband passed away?
Yes, I had worked in flower shop for several years. And the man that I was working for wanted to sell his flower shop. So we mortgaged our home, which was clear, and we mortgaged it to buy the shop. And in 2 months, my husband was promoted to glory. And I had a flower shop, and I could do the designing, but to do the book work, was out of my line. I knew that. When it come to figures, I did well to balance my own checkbook. But I always had a bookkeeper. I did a lot of my own designing. I learned, even after I was out of business, that the other florists called my shop the wedding shop. I did so many weddings. I love to do weddings. That's not where the money is. The money is in funeral work.
Mm. But I'll bet you made some really beautiful things.
Oh, I did, and I made very original things. That was why so many people come to me, because I didn't copy. They had designs that wasn't out of a book.
And you did flowers for many, many years. Your shop was called Flowers by Audrey?
Yes.
Well, Audrey, you have been through so much in your life, and you've been a very successful businesswoman, and you're clearly adored by your family. Why did this question about your high school diploma come up again? Your granddaughter said that you have stated that was your greatest regret in life, not getting your high school diploma. Why is that?
Well, when my son was 16, he brought home a horrible report card. And I showed it to his dad, and I said, you know, what this kid has in mind is he's going to drop out of school because he's 16. And my husband just handed him back his report card, and he said, Craig, you're going to be in high school till you're 21 because you're going to graduate. And the way this card looks, you're either going to have to knuckle down or you're going to be in school for a long time. That's all he said to him. That was the last report card that he brought home, D's and F's.
So he turned it around and he graduated.
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. And your granddaughter got in touch with the schools in Waterloo and told them that you wanted a diploma and that you deserved one?
You know, I don't know what question she answered. But she said that her grandmother said that was her one regret, that she didn't finish school, because we rented an apartment that I would, in the morning, watch the kids going to school, and I thought, I could have got married and gone back to school and got my diploma, but I don't think I never mentioned that to my husband, and I couldn't remember ever telling my granddaughter that, but she did.
There are a lot of people who are hoping that they will live to be 99 years old. Do you have any advice for people about how to get to where you are?
Well, yes. My only advice would be that they put their trust in the Lord Jesus Christ as their personal Savior and leave it up to Him.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
You're welcome.
Audrey Crabtree of Waterloo, Iowa. She now lives in a retirement community in Cedar Falls. And this hour, we're going to talk about longevity, aging in Iowa, keys to living well into the older years. And with me now is Peter Martin. He's professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. He studies aging and specializes in centenarians. Hello, Peter.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And you have written that longevity is only about 20% in the genes. That's going to surprise a lot of people. What are the other factors?
Well, if you want to start with Audrey Crabtree, I think she gave you some clues. There's a lot of determination in her. There was a lot of resilience. There's a lot of, dealing with adversity in positive ways. Sounds like she's been very active all her life, great focus on family that she has, and of course she mentioned herself, a good sense of religiosity. So these are all things that we consider aside from genetics. Genetic components are important, But 80% is really your attitude and your lifestyle.
All right. So attitude, your decision about whether you will live a long life seems to have a lot to do with it.
Well, I'm not sure that centenarians plan to have a long life. Most of the centenarians to whom we talk never thought that there would be 100. But it's an attitude about life. And so, you know, the years add up and all of a sudden you see yourself being 99 or 100.
So let's break it down a little bit. Can you try to characterize what that attitude about life is?
Well, it's a lot of it is what we call resilient personality. So that has to do with not worrying too much, not being too anxious about everyday life and coping in a very active way, trusting that your family will be there, your community will be there to support you. And of course, in her case, also trusting her own religion. People who are 100 years and older, we find, are very conscientious people. They know what's expected of them. They are high in what we call agreeableness. So they do tend to not, you know, have a lot of fights and you know, disagreeable attitudes. And first and foremost, perhaps stay very, very active throughout their whole life.
Well, I want to bring Donna Harvey into the conversation now. She's director of the Iowa Department on Aging. Hello, Donna.
Hello.
And I know that Iowa, of course, has an aging population. We have more people over the age of 85 per capita than any other state in the union. Can you characterize how our population dynamic is changing?
I think, you know, Dr. Martin shared a lot of the insight to what's changing. But what we're finding is we have a great growing population in our rural communities, and then faced with making a difficult decision of needing to relocate to more urbanized areas so they can have better support, which I then listened to what Audrey said, and she has a wonderful, compelling story that matches many of the centenarians that we'll meet next week. But the importance of having a family caregiver system, she started that herself with staying home to care for her grandmother. And then looking at the fact that her granddaughter was very involved and wanted to celebrate her grandmother's life. And so what we're finding is at the department, we can celebrate. We work with professionals like Dr. Martin on how do we increase the longevity. But then what can we do to make sure that we have a strong caregiver system, family members, friends, religious communities that support that older loved one as they continue to age. I'm blessed to have a grandmother at 98.6, so she's just a little behind Mrs. Crabtree.
All right, very, very close, though. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. My guests right now are Donna Harvey. She is director of the Iowa Department on Aging, and Peter Martin, professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. His research focuses on centenarians. And coming up in just a few minutes, we'll also hear from a couple of people who have lived long, full lives and have many years left, Bob Welsh of Iowa City and Evelyn Berkby of Sydney, Iowa. They'll be joining us with some of their insight in a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this hour we're talking about aging. The population of seniors in the state is growing. Baby boomers are getting to retirement age, and aging is changing a little bit. We also have some challenges facing our state because of the growing population of older people in the state. And, of course, there are a lot of personal challenges to growing older as well. With me is Peter Martin. He's professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. He studies aging. He specializes in centenarians, people who are 100 years and older. Donna Harvey is here. She is director of the Iowa Department on Aging. And Donna, of course, I just mentioned baby boomers are getting older. And it seems to me that every mark that the baby boomer generation has hit, they have redefined what it means to be that age. As baby boomers are moving into their golden years, how is that changing the dynamic of aging?
Number one, I don't believe if you ask a baby boomer, they would decide that they were old. So I think that's one of the first. And I think it's going to be a challenge to how do we celebrate being an older person in the United States, because we're probably, because I'm one of them, will not ever proclaim that we are there, which I think is a positive in many ways, because we're going to want to keep going and keep busy. The other thing we know is, if you think about your parents, grandparents, and I know, Charity, you're much younger than some of us on this talk show today, but the very fact that my grandmother did not work outside the home, my mother did only after we were all in school, the changing dynamics of having a workforce that includes both females and male will challenge us, I believe. Our lack of probably being as conservative with financials are going to probably make all of us redefine what role does the government play in sustaining all of us, and what role might we all need to step up even as we move closer to that retirement age to decide what is the value of life and what do we need in order to be comfortable and maybe not have to have such a high level of lifestyle like we've had while we're working.
One of the big changes that we've seen over the years is, of course, people moving farther away from their families. And again, the baby boomers sort of led the way with that, with their career changes and moving around the country and around the world. Now, as people age, that has impacted, of course, the generation before the baby boomers, because many of their kids were elsewhere. But also it continues to impact all of us. And you talked about having a good family caregiving structure. Is that a real challenge, that family just may not be anywhere close by?
Absolutely. And the other changing dynamic are the new family compositions. So I'm going to use me as an example. I had no children. I married a man who has two children. One has special needs, and the other one lives in Phoenix, Arizona. So if we think about the caregiving challenges, the mere fact that who will provide that ongoing support? If grandma gets sick, would there be a student that stayed home? Would there even be students that would stay home in the evening to care for grandma? Because you are exactly right. We're not seeing family units stay intact like they used to. I'm kind of an anomaly probably in my family that I was the first person in many generations to move away, and I moved a whopping 100 miles from my family. So as my parents' age and my grandmother, there has been ongoing caregiver support, but that is very unusual. And oftentimes at the local level, they get pleas from children in New York, California, Arizona, wanting to figure out how do they help mom and dad grow older when they only come back at the holiday.
Right. Well, and Peter, of course, a lot of people do aspire to live to 100. We all want long, full lives, but I guess the fullness is a real challenge. You have studied the factors that lead to people who have lived to be 100 years old also being happy at that age. What are some of the important things that lead to feeling happy when you've reached that age?
Well, what we hear more often than not is that centenarians want to continue to be useful in some way. Centenarians do not want to just sit in their room and let the day go by. They want to be involved. They want to be part of their community. They want to be part of their family. Now, some of that is compromised by, you know, some limitations perhaps in hearing or in vision, so they may not be able to read the newspaper as well, or, you know, listen to the radio or listen to a conversation. So, you know, maybe family members need to spend some extra effort to make sure to keep our oldest old involved. That starts with obviously visiting. That starts with talking with them. That starts with taking them out into the community, maybe to have a meal at a restaurant rather than in their own home or if they're in a nursing home. So what makes centenarians happy is not altogether different from the rest of us. It's just that often we forget that we need to pay attention to somebody who's 100. They are very well alive, and they would like to share their lives with others.
And looking at some of the factors that lead to people being depressed, I mean, depression, it can be a very serious problem at any age, but it can also be a very serious problem for our seniors. What are some of the factors that can lead to depression?
Well, we were actually surprised when we first looked at the depression levels in centenarians that they were quite high. And so, you know, I talked to my interviewers and they came back and would say, well, you know, we have these high depression scores on our depression scale, but they didn't seem depressed to us. They seemed really, they were neat people. And so we looked a little bit more closely, and what we found out is that actually a lot of the depression is explained by higher fatigue levels. If you ask any doctor or any psychologist, you know, when we look at depression, we ask, well, you know, do you have a hard time getting up in the morning? Well, you know, for a centenarian, that has a different meaning than for a 20-year-old who has a hard time getting to class on time. So, you know, depression levels are mostly explained by sort of the way that we measure depression for younger adults. And it's not a high level of sadness. We rarely see that. It's a high level of not having enough energy, the same amount of energy that others have. What we do see is a high level of loneliness for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. Your environment is a little bit more restricted. You can't get out as easily. You can't just hop in a car and go somewhere. So you're relying on other people to be with you. And so, you know, depression is different from loneliness. We don't see very high depression levels in our oldest old, but we do see high levels of loneliness.
The question of loneliness is an interesting one. I had a very dear friend who lived to be 102 years old, and I visited her every 2 weeks from the time I was 7 years old until I graduated from high school, and then I visited her every time I went home from college. And someone once asked her if I came to see her very often, and she said, no, not very often. So when you're in a retirement home or a nursing home and you're all by yourself, the perception of how often someone actually is coming to see you, it seems like that could really make the loneliness much worse, that you are there waiting for people to come.
Exactly.
In your study of happiness, you also noted that people really seem to take a lot of joy out of looking back on their accomplishments in life.
Yes, and that is what makes centenarians so unique. They bring 100 years of life with them when you talk with them, when you see them, or 90, 95 years. That's a very, very long time. Often when we visit as outsiders, centenarians, we may see their health, we may see even their frailty, but we forget that there's a wonderful story, life story, that's behind you know, our older citizens. They remember things from 90 years ago when they were children. They remember the Great Depression. They've seen wars. And so, you know, all of that makes this person whom you see and with whom you interact, and we often forget that. We just ask them, well, how are you? And we expect an answer that concerns health. We don't dig any deeper when there's a lot of richness that we could really see. In many ways, centenarians, all of our lives are like good books. And I've always said that, you know, the best chapter in a good book often comes at the very end, when you kind of pull all these things together. And that's what you see in centenarians.
Well, I want to bring two more guests into the show who have excellent books. Bob Welsh is here with us. He lives in Iowa City. He's a former minister at First Christian Church in Iowa City. He is 87 years old and continues to be very involved in the community. He's on the Johnson County Livable Community Housing Board and is also a legislative liaison. Hello, Bob.
Good to be with you, Charity.
Thank you so much for coming today. And Evelyn Berkby is here with us on the line, one of my favorite guests of all time. Evelyn has been writing a weekly column called Up a Country Lane for the Valley News, formerly known as the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel, for 64 years now. She's also the author of 11 books, most recently Always Put in a Recipe, a collection of her columns. And she still does regular commentary on KMA Radio in Shenandoah. She is also 94 years old. Hello, Evelyn.
Hello, Charity, and thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show with us again, and I'm hoping that both of you can give us some insight into some of the choices that you have made and continue to make to live a full, rich life many years past the years that many of us actually live to. And Bob, you did retire. We'll talk with Evelyn, who's never actually taken that step. But Bob, when you retired, did you make a conscious decision to remain involved in the community?
I did. I looked at what places I had lived, considered where I might move, and I really decided to stay in Johnson County, because Johnson County, to me, has all the things which are needed to help you age successfully.
And what are some of those things that you felt you needed?
Well, you know, first of all, I support community. When I was working on establishing Johnson County Liberal Community, I met with the Board of Health, and the chair said, what's the most important factor of successful aging? And I confessed that we had never discussed that question. But my answer was a support community. Whether that's a faith community or a quilting group or a poker club or a group of guys get together for a beer, having a support community. But, you know, in Johnson County, just think of the things that you need that we have here. Excellent medical care. A whole array of home and community-based services. For people who can no longer live in their homes, we have excellent assisted living facilities. We have nursing homes that have achieved no deficiency ratings. We have transportation. We have a whole array of cultural and athletic events, physical fitness opportunities, mental health agencies, nutrition programs, volunteer opportunities. You know, when you think of what you would like to have as you age over, Johnson County has it.
And for you, you already had a friendship network. Your congregation, of course, was here, so you knew many people. And you have a son and now a stepson as well who live nearby.
That's right. And, you know, having that, again, family and support system, I really just turned 87. And the interesting thing is, a few years ago, I was asked by my stepson, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I really don't need anything. I don't want anything. He said, I'm going to give you something. It might as well be something that you can enjoy or that you need. And I thought for a while, and I said, give me 3 light bulbs and a promise that you will install them for me. And you know, Charity, I haven't changed a light bulb for 3 years now. I haven't been on a ladder. And Friday, when we were together to celebrate my 87th birthday, Warren and his wife, Bonnie, gave me a contract, and it was to certify that they will do things like changing light bulbs, climbing ladders, to help me stay in our home.
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful gift. And Evelyn, the years in which most people retire came and went for you.
Oh, yes.
Why did you choose not to retire?
Well, I have a sign next to my computer that my 3 sons gave me. It's a poster that has a rocking chair on it, and it says, keep off. And so I didn't dare retire. They are very active, and 2 of them are writers, and I love writing. I would write if nobody read it now. I think it keeps my little gray cells alive and going. And there is just so much of adventure I'm discovering in being old. And I finally talk about being old. Even though I had a good friend who was in college who needed to write a paper about aging, and she called and asked if she could interview me. And I said, of course. And I said, what ages are you talking about? Well, between 65 and 85. Oh, dear, I said, I don't qualify. I'm too old. And she said, we'll squeeze you in. And we had a delightful time. But I live in a small town. And I was thinking about Johnson County, which I know very well. And I love it, but I am stuck in this small town probably the rest of my life, and it's good. We have wonderful neighbors. There's a support group here you wouldn't believe. Maybe we have to go out to nearby towns for hospitals and doctors.
Right. Well, and you travel all the way to Omaha for your medical care, right?
We do most of our medical care there. And by the time you get to be 94, as I am, and Robert's almost 95, he'll be 95 next month, and we have excellent care that's kept us seeing. I don't drive anymore because some of my vision isn't too perky, but I can still use a computer. I can still write. I can still see the sunsets and the sunrise. And one of the things, oh, so many things came to my mind with your guests this morning. I have lost all of my first cousins, many, many of my relatives, many friends. I'm almost the one that's left. And I thought, oh, that's a sad time. And then it dawned on me, no, it isn't. I'm left. I'm here. I'm still here. Let's make the most of it.
Well, we need to take a short break. We'll be back to this conversation in just a moment. I'm talking with Evelyn Berkby, who has been writing a weekly column called Up a Country Lane now for 64 years. She lives in Sydney, Iowa. Bob Welsh is here of Iowa City, former minister at the First Christian Church, and also Peter Martin, professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University, and Donna Harvey, the director of the Iowa Department on Aging. We're talking about longevity and living well and the challenges of our aging population in Iowa, and we'd love to hear from you as well. If you have questions or stories you'd like to share, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about longevity and living well into our golden years. With me is Peter Martin, professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. Also, Donna Harvey, director of the Iowa Department on Aging, Bob Welsh of Iowa City, former minister at First Christian Church, and Evelyn Berkby of Sydney, Iowa. She is also the columnist who writes Up a Country Lane for the Valley News, formerly known as the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel, also author of 11 different books. And Peter, before the break, we were talking to both Bob and Evelyn, and they were both talking about the ways that they have remained engaged in their community and in meaningful work well past the years that many people retire. Is that an important part of living well into our golden years?
Absolutely. I said earlier that activity, staying active, is probably the number one component of predicting longevity. And we've seen this, in both of the comments that Bob and Evelyn made. And I was particularly intrigued also to listen to Evelyn emphasizing cognitive activity. So it's not just that you go out there and have a cup of coffee every day. You need to exercise your brain to continue to stay, healthy. And there's a lot of sort of work together of your body and your mind. Both of those need to be exercised, if you wish. And Bob talked about successful aging. We've done a lot of work on what contributes to successful aging. And really, it takes continued effort to stay active so that you can age successfully and age well.
Well, and we were talking earlier about how being in a facility like a nursing home or even a retirement home sometimes can be quite isolating. It can also be a place where I would guess you have to work at keeping your brain active. What are some of the things that older people can do and that we can do to help them keep their brains active?
Well, really covers the aspects that we all enjoy doing. For instance, simple things such as reading is important, even crossword puzzles, just to keep up your sort of what we call your verbal intelligence or your verbal activity is very important. Spatial activities of taking walks around the retirement community if you have that possibility. So it's really no different the types of activities. They engage all these activities that we've enjoyed doing ourselves, talking, you know, engaging in a conversation with others. Anytime you say something, anytime you listen to something, you do exercise your brain. And so rather than to shut yourself out and say, well, I can't hear very well, you need to continue to make an extra effort and let people know that maybe your hearing isn't as great as it used to be, but you need to do it so that you keep exercising your brain.
Well, and Donna, you mentioned earlier that many of the people who are aging in our rural areas in Iowa are faced with the decision of whether they move to an urban area because of the greater care support system that's there. But I can imagine that leaving friends behind can be very, very difficult. What are some of the things that we can do to help people make a successful transition?
Absolutely. It can be very difficult. And I want to, number one, on the cognitive exercise, Bob probably wouldn't tell you, but he is our go-to guy when we need research of all other state laws. So he, too, is very, very active in the cognitive sense. So I just want to give him kudos for that. But one other little challenging piece, I heard the transportation, and I heard Evelyn say she no longer drives. I will tell you that is the most compelling challenge to anybody staying in their small rural area. So this is my plea. For all of you who have an elder loved one that lives in a rural community, I want you to take just a moment and write down every place and how many times you go out to get in your vehicle to run an errand, and then think about your elder loved one and how restricted they are and what you might be able to do to help address that challenge, because that is the first barrier that will be placed before everybody. The second piece is elder housing appropriately available? And Bob is right. Johnson County is doing livable communities, but we're trying to work with individuals like Dr. Yoga Shah from Des Moines University and AARP and some of the other university partners we have to say, how can Iowa ensure that we have livable communities no matter where you reside, so we don't have to have individuals deciding how they and where they live, but also can we deliver services differently? Can the healthcare arena go back to almost the home visits as a doctor versus requiring everybody to load in a vehicle and drive to Omaha? At some point, that may even be a challenge, even with somebody driving you. So I think when we look at what does Iowa need to do, those are the difficult questions that we're posing to many partners as we are invited to the table. And personally, I believe aging is should be on the agenda of every state department beyond health and human service. It should be economic development. It should be transportation. So you might guess I pose Amen. That quite often. So, you know, I think Iowa needs to have a greater dialogue on the very fact that we celebrate aging every day. And if we don't, shame on us, because we have every reason to do that. But how can we start working together to make that happen? You know, with my grandmother, she went to every sports event of grandkids and great-grandkids until about 2 years ago when she started falling, and it just became difficult and dangerous for her to go to many of those. But it took all of us pitching in to say, okay, who's going to go get grandma to take her to the event? And I think, you know, holidays are coming up. It's a perfect time to have family sit down at the table to have those discussions and start planning now, even if they're still driving. What can we start planning now?
Right. Well, and Evelyn, before the break, you were talking about how you have outlived, of course, many of the people that you have loved over the years. And that's got to be a real challenge. The older you get, the more funerals you wind up attending. And it sounds like you have a great attitude about being a survivor. And of course, you have your husband still with you and you have three wonderful sons. But how do you deal with seeing so many friends go before you?
First of all, I think people need to be optimistic all through their lives. I was very fortunate in having a father who would get up in the morning and say, it's going to be a good day, and it will be. And then I just don't think we had a choice. It was going to be a good day. He also had a great sense of humor. And so as I aged and began to lose friends, I thought, it's been good that I've had all these friends. I've loved them. How fortunate I've been. I don't want to live a negative critical life. I want to be optimistic, even if I lose my own family, which I've lost all of my own immediate family. Fortunately, I have these three wonderful sons who are most attentive. They email me often, they call me often, and each of them plays a very important role in our life, although they live out in Seattle and Montana. But you know, no place is very far away anymore. We've got the contacts through our email and through our telephones and ways that 100 years ago nobody had. You know, they wasn't covered wagons. There's so many, many advantages that we have now. But I think that optimistic attitude has made it possible. The first very, very close friends that I had who died, it was hard. And life is adjustment. And when you're older, maybe there are more adjustments. But we are so fortunate in having wonderful neighbors. One of my neighbors ended up yesterday afternoon at our door with a big kettle of potato soup.
Oh.
And she likes to come and bring us food. And we like that, too. So I think part of that, too, is my husband was a Boy Scout leader. He did so many community things in the church and in different organizations. I've worked in town. It's kind of payoff time in a way. These people knock at their door, could we take you on errands? Robert gave up driving just a month or so ago.
Oh.
And it was hard. Men, I think, have a harder time. I kind of sat back and said, well, I've got a chauffeur now.
Right, right.
So I think a lot of his attitude, a sense of humor, a sense that this is joy. Where's that bottle of wine that you get when you're the last man standing? You remember that in MASH?
They had a
special on that one time. And I'm looking. I haven't seen that bottle of wine yet.
Well, maybe it's still coming. Maybe one of your neighbors will bring one over.
Oh, my.
Bob, let me ask you. You know, we're talking about making new friends, staying engaged in the community. You took making new friends in older years to an extreme by getting married again at age 65. So that seems to be something important to you.
I did. When we got married, both at 65, she's actually 28 days older than I am. And, you know, she thinks that means she, you know, can make the decisions.
She robbed the cradle.
But,
and now.
No, when we got married, I promised her 15 years. At the end of those 15 years, I promised her 5. At the end of those 5 years, I promised her 3. And, you know, I'm over a third of the way there now. But, you know, I came to realize that I probably am alive today because I got married. You know, she makes sure that I eat right. I've known for years that I need to exercise more, but as a part of my 87th birthday, I promised her that I would start exercising. So, you know, like this morning, I did my exercise before I came to the studio. Family is very important.
Well, and Peter, let me ask you, because, of course, making exercise a part of your daily routine is something that has evolved over the years. Now, Evelyn and her husband lived on a farm, and so there's always plenty of exercise to be had when you're taking care of a farm and land. And, you know, people used to just be more active on a daily basis. They didn't need to take time out to actually focus on exercising. But how important is physical activity as people age?
Well, we learn more and more about it, how important it really is. And I'm glad to hear that Bob said he just started, even though he had not done it for maybe his whole life. When we need it most, really in our 80s and 90s and maybe 100s, we tend to exercise the least. And I'm saying that because when you're 85, 90, 95, you know, then it is important that you have enough strength to get out of a chair. It's important that you can carry a jug of milk. It's important so that you feel secure enough you don't fall, a big issue in very, very old age. And so exercise is, of course, important at any age, but it becomes even more important as you reach your 80s and 90s and hundreds. If you want to stay healthy, if you want to stay engaged, that is a very, very critical issue. It's a specific type of activity. Physical activity, but we should not underestimate the importance of it.
Well, and Bob, what kind of exercise did you do this morning?
I got on a bike and tread, and my doctor told me, hey, Bob, start at 10 minutes a day, then the next week, you know, go to 15 and work yourself up, and that's where I am.
All right.
And let me say, I really feel so fortunate. You know, I've been celebrating my birthday now. Started on Friday with my stepson, and when I leave here, I'm going out to lunch with my son and his wife, my wife, to end my celebration.
Oh, wonderful. And, you know, at a certain age, I have noticed with friends and loved ones over the years that we tend to hide our age when we're in our 40s and 50s, maybe avoid that question. But at a certain point, we start being proud of the age that we've achieved. Bob, when do you think that happened for you?
I'm not sure. I do remember when I was a kid, I told God that I wanted to die before I was 60. Because everybody that was 60 was so old and decrepit. Fortunately, I remembered that request when I was 59, and so I put a change order in to God, and I said, hey, would you hold off? I'll let you know, and I'm still going.
Excellent. Evelyn, when do you think you started being proud of the age that you had achieved?
I never had a choice, because once I started writing my newspaper column, and I had graduated from high school here in Sydney, then went out into the world and did things, and then came back and married, and now we do live on the edge of Sydney in an acreage. I don't call it a farm anymore, Charity.
Okay.
the question was about the age. Because,
right. When did you start feeling proud of it? Everyone knew how old you were always.
I always did. My mother would not, until she was 70, tell anyone how old she was. And then all of a sudden, she was proud of being 70, and so she started telling people then. But I think people have always known how old I am, and the fact that I'm still going seems to be a shock to many people when I say I'm 94. And they say, oh, no, you don't look 94. Well, I don't look in the mirror very often because I know I do. But that's okay, because that's part of the adjustment of another period in life. Aging is opportunity, and I want to take every advantage of it I can. And we have a house that we fixed up for our old age, and it's here.
Evelyn, I'm going to let you have probably the last word here today, which I know is a situation you're very comfortable with. But for someone who's, I don't know, 38 years old, let's say, and hoping to live to be your age and to be as active as engaged, what's your piece of advice?
Well, I talk to young people a great deal. I love young people. Of course, everybody's mostly younger than I am. You have some folks that aren't today. But I love to surround myself with young people. And I tell them, keep your mind sharp. Don't use drugs. Don't smoke. You know, use moderation in all things. And drink lots of milk.
All right. And Bob, there's 15 seconds left for your piece of wisdom. How do I make it to 100?
Keep active, seek to make a difference, and realize the importance of loving and being loved.
Thank you all so much. Bob Welsh lives in Iowa City. He's a former minister at First Christian Church and very, very involved in the community. He just turned 87 years old. Evelyn Berkby is still writing a weekly column called Up a Country Lane for the Valley News in Shenandoah, Iowa. She is 94 years old. And also Peter Martin, Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University, Donna Harvey, Director of the Iowa Department on Aging. Thank you all for your time today. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, wildlife biologist Jim Pease.